is going on, ladies and gentlemen? Welcome into the Lineup Logic Podcast, the daily fantasy podcast bringing you lineup construction ideas for the DFS slate to come. We are bringing you today's player breakdown for NFL Week 1. We are talking through the main slate on Sunday. Plenty of good games to target, tons of interesting stuff out there. Thank you for joining us here in the Lineup Logic DFS podcast. A couple things, if you're not already, patreon.com/lineuplogic. Remember, $10 is going to get you the cheat sheet released on Friday every single day, as well as access to the lineup show this season. The lineup show is going to be out on Friday. That's the plan thus far. As long as technology cooperates and we get everything aligned perfectly, the broadcast, first broadcast of the lineup show over there for patrons on patreon.com, where we will do a live crowdcast, which is a video show where we will talk through lineup construction ideas, different takes, all that kind of stuff. So that is coming up tomorrow. Cheat sheet coming out tomorrow. The traditional, you know, expert survey cheat sheet that you guys are used to for Lineup Logic patrons. And remember, please, every single dollar that you guys are donating, or excuse me, to your subscription is a donation to Hurricane Harvey relief. You know, we got Hurricane Irma coming around the corner, man. And it's, that thing is going to cause some serious damage as well. But people in Houston still deserve our attention. And like we committed to last week, Hurricane Harvey relief, we are up above $800 in donations to Houston Food Bank. Just because you guys rule. I mean, I think the scale of what we're going to be capable of doing with a donation over $800 for a food bank, I don't know if people understand how serious and how awesome that is. I mean, I think it's we can't. I think people forget how much that is. Listen, like you can give. Like $1 is worth three meals. Okay. This Houston area food bank is saying they scale it as basically a $500 donation can provide 1500 different individual meals for people. We're staring down an $800 donation, possibly. I would love to get it a little bit closer to $1,000, may just round it out at $1,000 just to get up there. You know, I mean, we're talking about 3,000 different meals, 3,000 different meals for people in Houston who are just trying to get their feet back under them after all the flooding, which the floodwaters haven't even left. I mean, they're still there. They're still working the reservoirs out there in Houston. So we're focused on football, but people down there have way bigger things to worry about. And we, as a result, we got to help them out. So patreon.com/lineuplogic, $10. And at the end of the month, cancel. I mean, whatever you want to do, man. You know, you guys, it's a good cause. So jump in there. I'm excited for the player breakdown. Let me give you an overview just so you guys remember. If you haven't listened, yesterday I went through the game-by-game breakdown. The idea with the game-by-game breakdown is narrow your focus. We talk Vegas. We talk about situations that seem to be positive, negative, et cetera. It's going to help you kind of start to focus in on things. And I think sometimes with some of these DFS podcasts, you have to do your, with NFL specifically, you have to do your research in stages. You get a little information, you digest, you sit on it, you look around, then you dive deeper, and then you dive a little bit deeper. Today and tomorrow, the deepest that we're going to dive, and I think that that's kind of where we're going, right? The first show of the week, process-oriented, figuring out how we improve our process. Second show of the week, game overview, get a big 1,500-foot view of the slate, understand where we're going to be headed. Today, player breakdown, get into the nitty-gritty details on the player pool that we want to create, and of course, the lineup show on Friday, thinking about unique lineup construction ideas, ownership leverage, ability to fit different pieces based on salary and stuff like that into our lineup. So we go deeper every single day with Lineup Logic DFS. And the objective, as always, make people better players. DFS is a challenge. It is a skill. That's why it's fun, but you got to continue to get better. You got to continue to dive deeper. You don't want to just listen to a bunch of touts say, yeah, I think Tom Brady's a pretty good play today. I'm into him. I'm going to probably have him in about 60% of my rosters. No, that shit doesn't help recreational players like us. Guys who have full-time jobs, families, you guys need to understand process, statistics-driven information, reasons we're making decisions that we're making, and that's why. Try to peel back the cover on some of this stuff that makes us better players. So we're getting into it. In the next hour, I'm going to go through QBs, running backs, wide receivers, tight end, kicker, defense. So I'm getting all of it. I'm going to give you guys a for each position, just so you know, I'm going to give you a high-priced chalky option, a couple pivots, and then a value option, something that I see kind of on the lower end of the pricing scale that I think is worthwhile. And now, you know, listen, the takes aren't going to be screaming hot earlier in the season because we have data from last year that is reliable. So we do have to kind of be a little bit safer in our process. There's fewer risks that we can take because we have a lot of unknowns. And so we're going to go away from some of the unknowns today and lean on the information that we are sure of and the trends historically that we understand about players and stuff like that. So, we'll get into some hot fire takes later down the road. But you're listening to today and I say Aaron Rodgers is a good play, you know, don't roll your eyes at me. There's a reason there's historical precedent for these things, and we want to make high quality decisions heading into week one. So we're going to make high quality decisions. All right. So let's get into the player breakdown, the first of the NFL season, figure out who we love. Who do you love? All right. Starting off at the quarterback position. Listen, a very wise man once said the quarterback position is the most important decision that you make in your daily fantasy lineups. Why? Not because they are, you know, the most valuable necessarily. They aren't always the most valuable. Okay. And this was Matt Friedman, the editor over at Fantasy Labs, says this. It's because the quarterback controls the entire success of an offense. And if you are determining a quarterback can be successful, then you as proxy via that quarterback, you're going to be able to determine whether or not the skill position players in his offense can be successful. There's a correlation between quarterback, running back, wide receiver. Obviously, we know there's a massive correlation between wide receiver ones and quarterback success, but it holds true for the entire offense. There's even correlations between defense and quarterback success. So listen, quarterback is probably the most important part of what we're going to be doing. And I think this week the chalk top, I don't know if I would call him the top option, but I think the clear floor chalk option has to be Big Ben versus Cleveland. And I'll start because I know immediately if you know anything about Big Ben, it's, hey, Sean, what about the home road splits? Listen, the home road splits are really a thing. They are atrocious. He's got a lower completion rate, almost 50 fewer career TDs on the road. His interceptions goes up. His career passer rating drops by almost 11 full points. He's terrible on the road, and he's phenomenal at home. All of his massive fantasy upside games are at home. It's not like we are seeing the best version of Big Ben on the road, and I'm not thrilled about him being on the road in such a plus matchup in week one. That said, there's a lot to like about this. Massive favorite against a terrible defense that just lost Myles Garrett. For the first time in 3 years, he has a healthy Bryant, Bell, and Brown at his disposal. Martavis, Lev Bell, and Antonio Brown on the field at the same time. Something that apparently, according to Rich Rebar's worksheet over there at RotoWorld, something that's only happened in 21 snaps previously. That's craziness. So he has some of the most elite offensive weapons. There is not much that Big Ben has to do except for make sure he gets the ball into those guys' hands in order to be successful. Like I mentioned, Myles Garrett likely out with an ankle. Couple weeks, they're going to play it safe with the big fella, the rookie. So, you know, the Browns defense that was going to have a nice interior presence with Garrett, not week one against the Steelers and against a pretty efficient offense as well. Listen, Browns ranked 27th and 29th respectively against the pass and the rush last year. There's a very safe floor with Big Ben in this situation. They allowed a league high 19 fantasy points to the position on average in 2016. And I think at the minimum, you're going to see a positive game script with plenty of opportunity for his skill position players like Lev Bell, who they're saying is going to get 30 touches, which we know about a third of those are going to come through the air. And you get those free yards from Lev Bell passing situations. Last year, Lev Bell went for 146 and a touchdown. They won that game. Ben did not perform that well in that situation. He just didn't throw a touchdown. They managed the game. They got a couple field goals, but they won. I'm bullish on this situation. Week one, healthy weapons, healthy Ben, bad defense. I'm bullish on the Steelers today, and I think that Big Ben will be a chalky option, especially for, you know, players who aren't doing a ton of research. They're going to see Big Ben versus Cleveland and just go, okay, boom, easy, right? Now, if you want to pivot off of him, Aaron Rodgers is only $100 more, and he is guaranteed to get lower ownership as he will have Seattle, and just name value alone will probably push players off of that. I mean, $8,300 for Aaron Rodgers as a home favorite. I mean, you get nervous with Seattle, no doubt about it, but Rodgers is a home favorite, averaged 24 fantasy points. And there is space in this matchup where they're going to have, I think this could be a back and forth. This game in primetime last year was pretty high scoring. You have another primetime game, the 4 o'clock slot. I think this is a nice situation for Aaron Rodgers. The profile is just amazing. Led the league in red zone attempts last year, 13 red zone carries. I don't think people realize that. It's third overall for quarterbacks. He had some of the most red zone touchdowns. He's like third in rushing last year from the quarterback position. Just craziness. Top 10 in every form of QB efficiency ratings, QBR, passer rating last year. And the Seahawks secondary, very tough. Ranked third in Pro Football Focus's rankings of preseason. And their Hawks front seven is rated as a top two unit. They're the only team right now that has a top three unit on both the front end and the back end of that defense. They're projecting to be one of the best units out there. They're filthy. Don't get me wrong. His team is filthy, but you're talking about one of the best passers in the game. You can't short a man that consistent at home who creates so many red zone opportunities, 8+ red zone opportunities per game, 4 of which came within the 10-yard line. They led him to be the number one overall in 2016 in passing touchdowns last year, plus the leverage. The fear of the Seahawks defense alone will push people off of Rodgers, but you would be hard-pressed to tell me that Rodgers can't go out there, throw for 300 yards and 2 touchdowns, even if he does give up an interception. I think that is a baseline for a safe baseline to project in this situation for Aaron Rodgers. So, is it frightening? Yes, but there's a lot of reason to like Aaron Rodgers at that price point as a direct pivot off of Big Ben and what I think people will probably be unnecessarily scared of. I think one of the most popular plays on the board, but another pivot away from Ben and from Rodgers is going to be Marcus Mariota. I mean, the hype train is off the rails for Marcus Mariota, as it should be. He's got Oakland at home favorite. This is probably going to be the chalk, especially in cash games where you want to be paying up for Lev Bell and maybe one of those high-priced receivers. Mariota versus Oakland, total sitting at 51. Preseason hype is amazing. It should be. I mean, his numbers as far as efficiency made him, you know, as far as a fantasy quarterback, he was a QB1 last year, but his numbers as far as efficiency were unbelievable. Touchdown rate at 5.7%. That's within elite company. That is an above average rate. 61% completion rate inside the red zone. Excellent. Limited the interceptions, limited turnovers, limited sacks. In a phenomenal offensive line. Here's an interesting stat via playerprofile.com. The highest production premium at the position. Now, the best way that I can equate production premium, it's not an apples-to-apples comparison, but I think the best way that I can describe it is kind of like war. Like war, like in baseball, we have war, like wins above replacement. Their ability, situational production, to create situational production above average. He was number one in production premium last year at the position, which means he is clutch. He is efficient. He is exactly what we think. The numbers back it up. You add to that the matchup. I mean, Oakland is 25-17 in DVOA against the pass and then the rush. They were decent against wide receiver ones, but below the 20 mark against the wide receiver two, the wide receiver three, and the tight end, and the running back. You think about that. Mariota throws about 40% of his targets to Delanie Walker and DeMarco Murray, two of the biggest red zone threats that he has. You know, he has no problem dumping it to Delanie Walker and DeMarco Murray, and showed us that last year with those guys being two of the highest touchdown, I believe the two highest touchdown scorers on that team. So, we know he's capable of spreading it around, and even if they're capable of taking away one of his other weapons, whether it be Rishard Matthews or Eric Decker on the back end, he's going to be able to find those guys, Delanie Walker and DeMarco Murray, for production. Add to that, that offensive line, that unit is no joke. Top 10 as far as a Pro Football Focus preseason grade. No joke about that line. And they are also top five in rush rate, and they were top half of the league in pass protection as well. They were 15th in the league, so they were above average, or they were average in pass protection. Only a 5.7 sack rate, but a phenomenal top five rating as an offensive line in the rush blocking. And I think that's one thing that we forget. I mean, they are literally just fractions behind units like Dallas, which is impressive stuff. So, you know, we have to like the ability of the Titans to be successful on offense. And I think all that flows through Mariota. I think he's going to be pretty chalky, pretty popular. His price point is there. People recognize the talent, the name, the point per dollar value. And you know what? In your cash games, I have absolutely zero problems with rostering Mariota right off the bat. I think if you want to probably go to somebody, I don't know that he will be lower owned. I think it's going to be harder to project week one ownership. But I don't mind. In fact, I love. I don't know why I'm saying I don't mind. I love Cam Newton versus San Francisco. I think this is the nice pivot for possibly lower ownership off of Mariota. The San Francisco defense has some pieces. They drafted for defense. They've been consistently hammering the defensive side of the ball via the draft in the last couple of years. They're capable of growing, but they still have a long road. Listen, 31st worst front seven against the rush last year, graded as a 32nd overall unit by Pro Football Focus headed into 2017, who acknowledged they just have such a long way to go, and you can't go from worst to first in one season. Massive production to the wide receiver one and the wide receiver two. Top 10 numbers to the quarterback per game, 17 fantasy points. Cam is a 5-point road favorite. Usually he'll exceed expectations, projected expectations, by about 2 points in that situation. So I don't think there's any reason to think that Cam Newton can't torch this team like he did last year in this matchup, a matchup where Kelvin Benjamin went for two TDs, makes sense. And I think we could see a lot of solid production from the Panthers. It's kind of harder to project their skill players. I think, you know, it's not hard to expect that their skill players will find the end zone. I think it's hard to project which ones are going to find the end zone, except for perhaps Jonathan Stewart and Greg Olsen, who have the most consistent red zone marks there. So I think I'm interested in Cam. I think I'm okay with just Cam solo. Also, not rostering him in a stack. It may be stacking him with Olsen. I think that will be unique. I don't think a lot of times that's not unique. What am I saying? I think it's unique in certain contest forms in which people don't want to pay up for tight end. Does that make sense? So I like Cam in this spot. I think he's rock solid. So again, we're starting with Big Ben. I think that's going to get a lot of ownership against Cleveland. Very safe. I feel like there's a floor there. Rodgers versus Seattle, a pivot that may go a little bit under-owned, but it's Aaron Rodgers at home. Mariota versus Oakland, high ownership, but good point per dollar value. Cam versus San Francisco, perhaps a little bit lower ownership than Mariota, but equal upside in a road matchup against a poor defense. All right, let's move on to the running back position. These guys touting the rock this weekend. Listen, this Eat the Chalk segment at the top, it's basically every week going to be Lev Bell versus David Johnson. Are we okay with that? Every week I'm going to probably say, okay, this week I think it's DJ, and this week I think it's Le'Veon Bell. And this week, honestly, it could be either one. 93 and 9400 versus Cleveland and Detroit, respectively. There's reasons to like both, but I'll start with Le'Veon. Le'Veon's floor is so abundantly clear. Listen, I mentioned earlier 146 yards and a touchdown in this game last year, over 26 touches in that game. He averaged 7 targets a game in 2016 out of the backfield. Okay, it's 21 carries. There he had 30. He already said, they're already saying he's going to see his normal 30 touches a game. Just what else do you want? You want 30 touches from a guy who averages 5 yards per carry and 7 yards per target? Give me a break. You're talking about 150-yard floor against one of the worst defenses in the league. Almost a 55% red zone success rate for Lev Bell. It's the kind of thing you don't have to think about too hard. Okay, I mean, 20 carries, 5 catches, you know, you're talking about 100 yards and touchdown. It just seems like clockwork. There's no reason to guess, second guess Lev Bell's floor at 9,300. It's very, very clear. And I think it's one of those, like, ride the chalk moments, right? You kind of have to have them. You get too cute and you fade him, you know, you're playing the ownership odds, but come on, it's Le'Veon Bell. He's got the Browns. You almost have to just have him so you can ride that wave with everybody else. I don't mind pivoting to David Johnson, don't get me wrong, versus Detroit. It's equally sexy. This is the league's most inefficient defense in DVOA. 32nd in DVOA last year. They're just not a good unit. They allow too much production. Their front 7 did not grade out well. Bottom 25 in the league. 30th, in fact, in preseason grade. DJ is just so fucking good. He led the league in running back touchdowns, receptions, and was 2nd in the NFL in yards after catch, evaded tackles, and red zone carries. I mean, he is just elite in every single category. There's no joke here. Detroit and Arizona could easily see this game be a shootout. I think Matty Stafford has the ability to kind of try to keep up. Arizona's defense, we know, is an elite unit. They are damn good. But I think Matty Stafford at home, there's a reason he's the highest paid quarterback in the NFL. His completion rate with Jim Bob Cooter has gone up. He's been better at home. He is consistent. He limits mistakes. He doesn't limit mistakes. He's still prone to mistakes, but he has all of his weapons at his disposal. There's a reason he is so efficient, so consistently so consistently seen as a fringe QB1 in fantasy. I think that that's because it just, you can rely on him. And in this situation, you know, he's going to be able to produce. He's Matt Stafford. He's a damn good quarterback. And so long as he's able to keep this game competitive, you know, that's kind of an if against this defense. I think this game could easily shoot out and you could see David Johnson get plenty of high quality touches and opportunities in the red zone. Now, that said, even if this game doesn't shoot out, you have to like the idea that Arizona is going to continue to be able to hammer the run in a positive game script there as well. So DJ certainly in a good spot versus this Detroit front seven. I could do either. I can do both. I think that they're both intensely viable, but there are some really nice pivots at slightly lower price points. And one of those that you got to go to is LeSean McCoy. LeSean McCoy is a home favorite. The league's highest red zone success rate in 2016, a 28% TD rate. That's a slate high. That's insane. 28% touchdown rate last year on an offense that had the highest run rate in the red zone. Well, the highest run rates, period, but the highest run rate in the red zone. Listen, this guy is a fantasy darling. He's got a nose for the end zone. This is why we love LeSean McCoy. He gets in the end zone. He's a 10-point home favorite. There is no one else on that offense that's going to do skilled things with the football in the same way that LeSean McCoy is going to do. I think we're going to see him get tons of touches earlier this season. So long as he's capable of staying healthy, you're going to see plenty of volume for LeSean McCoy. And what better way to start than at home against the Jets, a defense that just is shipping off their pieces. They are not good. All right. They were a very solid run defense, very efficient stuff rate last year. They were actually one in DVOA. But you counteract that with the fact that they were 32nd in pass against the pass. They were incapable of stopping anything through the air. And we know that LeSean McCoy is involved in passing down situations. He's going to be their third down back. He's going to see plenty of running back targets. He's averaged three last year, but we saw situations where he had, you know, upwards of five catches per game. So you get into a situation where they're not having success running the ball, you're going to see passing down situations for LeSean McCoy, and I'm perfectly good with that. I like that. You know, positive game script for the Bills, even better at home. They're going to pound the rock. He's going to see volume, try to drain the clock. And they release Jonathan Williams. There's no one else there that they're going to give the ball to. Mike Tolbert, maybe. And listen, if Mike Tolbert becomes a goal line vulture this year, we're all going to find out together on week one and exhale and go, God damn it. Because it's not what you want to have happen. But all signs point to that Shady is going to get the volume in this offense as a 10-point home favorite against the worst team in football. You gotta love. I mean, and yes, I'm going to say the Jets are the worst team in football. I have a hard time seeing the Jets in that division. I'm going to have a hard time seeing them win a game. If they're 10-point dogs to the worst team in their division, well, let's be clear. I think the Buffalo is the other worst team in that division, right? They're 10-point dogs to them off week one. Like, what happens? Does Bilal Powell all of a sudden turn into Lev Bell, and Josh McCown has, you know, his Ryan Fitzpatrick year, and then this team just, you know, goes insane? I just don't see it. You don't see it. There's no wide receiver talent on the outside. There's nothing to love. They're shipping their defense off. It's all falling apart in the Meadowlands. So McCoy versus the Jets, you gotta love that. I think he's a great price point. And I think people, you know, 8.3K, it's a price point that people will be like, maybe I'll just pay up, right? Or maybe I'll pay down, and they'll probably feel comfortable paying down for DeMarco Murray versus Oakland. Listen, I like DeMarco Murray just as much as I like LeSean McCoy, and it's for primarily the same reason. As a home favorite, DeMarco Murray, I think people sometimes forget how productive he was right off the bat last year. Sure, he faded down the stretch a little bit. Yes, I mean, he had such serious volume that down the stretch they had to limit his touches a little bit. But early in the season, he was filthy. He's going to see 22 touches, okay? And just as much red zone opportunity as DJ and Love Bell, his red zone grades or red zone percentages are just as high about there as at those guys at 2K less. The price just isn't the same. I mean, he's in the 7Ks. He's a top 10. He has top 10 numbers in red, his opportunity share, red zone carries, touchdown rate, all of that stuff. Okay, the dude was fifth in the league in evaded tackles. What? Really? Yeah. Top 10 in running back efficiency last year, 2016. He's a damn good running back. I don't know why people like throwing shade on DeMarco Murray. I like him. And behind a line that graded fifth best unit for the rush last year. Listen, they were top 10 in a lot of metrics like getting out behind stuff rate. They were top 10 in second level. They were top second level or open field. Let me double check this. God, Football Outsiders offensive line grades are like honestly one of my favorite things. I think I'm going to try to memorize this stuff. Just get flashcards. Have my wife quiz me. Be like, New Orleans stuff rate, 14%. They were ranked second in 2016. Correct. If I have offensive line DVO, or excuse me, offensive line Football Outsiders flashcards, I don't know if I'll be married for a very long time. Where is the Tennessee power success rate? 68%. That's top 12. Stuff rate, 19%. Top 13. Second level rank, 9. Second level rank, they were 9 in the league. Open field yards, they were 13 in the league. The reason that they are so highly regarded is because they do everything. Okay, there are only so many offensive lines that were capable of doing everything and capable of creating just adjusted line yards. I mean, 4.63 is the same as Dallas, Pittsburgh, 4.68. League leader was New Orleans at 4.93. So you have to love the Tennessee offensive line, their ability to create consistent production at every single level. On the offensive line, in the second level, in the open field, they're going to create space for DeMarco Murray against an Oakland defense that just simply isn't good enough. I mean, Khalil Mack is just unbelievable, but it just doesn't matter if you have one uniquely talented player in a scheme that isn't necessarily productive. They were 15th last year in overall DVOA, 25th to the pass and 17th to the rush. You have to be willing to attack them in what is the highest total on the slate as a home favorite. So DeMarco Murray is one of my favorite pivots on the board. I think that Todd Gurley is in a great spot too. I'm not really a Todd Gurley guy. Could it be because I lost a league championship to a Todd Gurley owner in 2015 and maybe that was it. Maybe I just kind of have a thing against Todd Gurley that I need to adjust to and overcome. versus Indy, you gotta love this matchup. This defense just sucks. They just are bad. It's going to be a long year at Indianapolis, what's that Crowning Crow song? A long, long September, long November? Long December. That's the soundtrack for the Colts season, and it's only September. Because they're not going to be relevant in December. There's no way. They just have to do so much more rebuilding and not waste Andrew Luck's talent. They haven't been able. They've wasted drafts. The defense isn't good. And for a team that was so bad like the Rams to be pretty serious home favorites in this situation as an opener, that's a pretty simple recipe for, successful point per dollars, Todd Gurley. There are a lot of caveats here to Todd Gurley. Don't get me wrong. Do I believe in the physical talent? Yeah. I mean, the guy is a physical, he is a specimen. He is an NFL running back. He has the pedigree. There's nothing that stops me from believing in that. But the biggest caveats that I can think of are named Jared Goff and the offensive line. Listen, this was the worst team in... This was one of the worst offensive lines in football. They did upgrade it. They added, what's his name? Whitworth, from the Bengals. So they added some, you know, they added some pieces there to try and reinforce the offensive line. That's a good thing. Sean McVay, not an idiot. That's a good thing. Because Jeff Fisher is an idiot. That's a bad thing. listen, this was the worst defense in NFL against the rush, though. Okay, so even a slightly above average offensive line should be capable of creating space for Todd Gurley, who, remember, a lot of his production in 2015 came on breakaway runs. We have to try to like that. You got to like the volume. He still saw over 20 carries last year. You have to expect he's going to continue to get the volume because, what, are you going to give the ball to Jared Goff for 70% of the time and let him just air it out? Yeah, Jared Goff, vertical attack. Doesn't work. Not going to work. You want to win this game, you better rely on your best offensive player, which right now is Todd Gurley. And listen, if Jared Goff can figure out a way to make Sammy Watkins relevant, then Sammy Watkins could be in a really good spot. But I just don't trust Jared Goff getting the ball to that young man in that scheme. But I do like Todd Gurley in this spot. I think that he is in a great position to give you a solid point per dollar floor at $7,300. That's a great price point for him. I think people will be on him, though. I think people are excited to see him bounce back and are going to be willing to take the early season risk on a player with name value recognition against a bad defense. All right, moving on to the wideouts. Chalkity chalk chalk. I'm going to give you guys two at each for a total of six wideouts. I know we need a couple extra wideouts in our player pool. Listen, just so you're aware, one of the baseline things that I am going to be doing early in the season is I'm setting the bar for about 20% target market share. I'm not letting that number slip. That is one of the biggest indicators of wide receiver success rate. I'm not going to guess until we start to see trends from week to week in these offenses. So target market share for me is really, really important. And so you're going to hear some, you know, the big names. Listen, I'm not going to spit any hot fire takes at you. I'll give you a couple names at the end that might be a little bit under the radar. But I'm gonna go with what you know, and you have a highly volatile position in wide receiver. Target market share is one of the ways to decrease that volatility and actually try to lean on production. So I think Julio is in a great spot against Chicago. Listen, the Falcons have a 29-point implied team total, and Matty Ice is going to be able to dice up this defense. They're just not good yet. The issue that I have is that I think they slow this game down and that John Fox plays it close, right? The Falcons are going to score points. They're going to score points, and Devonta Freeman should be able to score points as well. I didn't talk about him in the running back section, but he is certainly in play against this defense. And I think I was reading about Steve Sarkisian. I think Sarkisian is going to make Devonta Freeman a much more like high volume kind of bell cow style back. I think that that's going to be something that you see from Sarkisian in this this new offense. Just from what I'm reading, but I think Julio is going to be, you know, I'll say this, I'll preface it with this. I think Julio is always a slightly better DK play than an FD. And the reason that I like Julio on DK is just the PPR format. You can't always count on touchdowns from Julio, but you can count on volume. And I think the volume and the yards make him more appealing there. You get the 100 yard bonus, right? So, you know, Julio, just from a sheer yards perspective, is an animal, and it's not crazy to think that he's easily has 100 yards. Target monster, too. I mean, 27% target rate, 9.2 targets per game in 2016 with the most effective quarterback in the NFL in Matty Ice. Bet you didn't know that. I mean, he was the highest in passer rating in 2016, one of the highest in air yards, everything like that. Matt Ryan can air it out, and he puts the ball on the spot. the other thing that I like is 18% hog rate. That's top five via player profile. Hog rate is a, by the way, a metric that they use over a player profiler that describes how many targets he gets when he's actually actively on the field for snaps, getting running routes. So when there is a situation in which Julio could catch a pass, how often is he getting targeted? So 18% of the time there, hog rate. The issue is really the red zone woes. That's always been the issue with Julio. You know, I like the Bear allowed performances to big wide receivers, however. 27th DVOA to wide receiver one. Julio, obviously capable of exploiting subpar coverage schemes. They allowed the 9th highest explosive pass rate as well, according to Sharp Football. And that aligns with what we saw late in the season. We saw big-name wide receivers like Marvin Jones, Jordy Nelson, down the stretch, guys who can stretch the field were capable. Stephon Diggs had his year's biggest game against them. They are capable of getting after it, okay? Getting after it, for sure. All it takes is, you know, one of those big 10 targets to go to the house and boom. But I mean, if you are on DK and you get 10 targets on 100 yards, that's a beautiful thing. That's a beautiful thing. So I think Julio is certainly in play. And I think I may put him slightly above Antonio Brown. I know that sounds silly, but Antonio Brown's production is always tied to, is always going to be tied to Big Ben, right? And Big Ben on the road, not great. His production starts to fall with Big Ben. We know Big Ben is not great on the road. Did I talk about in the quarterback segment? Yes. I think, I just wonder how much opportunity cost you're losing if you know that Lev Bell is going to be such a beaut in this matchup. He almost has the same number of targets as Antonio Brown. I would almost rather go with Big Ben and Lev Bell stacked rather than AB. But listen, you know, he's a target monster. Again, 25% target share in that offense. Is that going to change with Martavis? Yeah, but if anything, you're going to see less ability of safeties to cheat. You know, you can't throw cover two on Antonio Brown. You can't throw extra guys in coverage, and Martavis Bryant is trying to blow the top when he's trying to blow the top off of these defense. So, you know, listen, it's Antonio Brown is in a great spot, but I think we have to kind of hold our expectations. Of course, you know, the minute that I say tamper our expectations, Antonio is going to go for 170 and 2 touchdowns. there's no one in that secondary that's going to guard him. Cleveland graded as the 30th in the NFL against wide receiver last year. The wide receiver ones last year. There's just nobody, you know? I mean, it's just not going to happen. So it certainly is a great spot for AB. If you want to pivot, I think there's a couple names here that I love in a little bit of lower cost range. Amari Cooper, man. Cooper is going to get Adoree Jackson, rookie from USC. High pedigree, kid's got talent, got some speed, but I don't really need to say more. If I get a third-year guy in Amari Cooper who has explosive abilities in traffic, you know, dominated in college, going up against an undersized corner, cover corner in a man scheme, because Titans are primarily man to man. Adoree Jackson, he's going to be good, but listen, this is one of the most dangerous wide receivers in the game. We're predicting a breakout year. It makes a lot of good sense. His red zone numbers were insane. I mean, he had, you know, like 12 red zone targets and converted zero of them into touchdowns last year. That's just like unbelievably outlierishly low. There's going to be a regression there. He's going to make progress in that situation. So, you know, in the scheme with Derek Carr, you have to, you have to think that if this game goes to that 50-point total, that Amari Cooper is going to have to do some damage in this pass defense. And listen, Oakland's offensive line, one of the best in pass protection. This is part of the reason why Derek Carr is so capable of, you know, being an efficient quarterback, because they give him that pocket to work with. And Amari Cooper in man coverage, you find that boy, good luck. That is hot read. If you get Derek Carr, he picks that up. That is a hot read happening. Highest game total on the slate. Wide receivers with a 20% market share and a total over 50 as a trend. Exceeded expectations, but pretty high ownership on them. Okay, that high total is going to get some ownership over to Amari Cooper, which means, hey, just, you know, pivot to my man Mikey Crabtree if you want to go down there. I have no problem with that. His red zone numbers are filthy. He is one of the better red zone threats on that team, if not the best red zone threat. So if you're worried about ownership on Cooper, go to Crabtree. If you're worried about ownership on both, or excuse me, on one, play both. Be different. Play both of them, right? What's there to lose? A touchdown. That's what they're... Or a game, because you just hedge. You get both of them. Hey, the other guy at that price point, Dougie Baldwin. I love me some Dougie Baldwin. No question out there. He showed he was just filthy in preseason. Russell Wilson's finding him. Russell Wilson's healthy. He has been in amazing shape this offseason. There's a lot of talk about how Russell Wilson is just like, he's back. He's like, he is laser focused to be an elite quarterback this year. And, you know, it's scary. You have a top five defense plus Russell Wilson, who has proven to be one of the most efficient quarterbacks. Of course, quarterback efficiency, even in a down year last year, that offense was incredibly efficient. They have now, you know, six running backs. So whoever gets hurt, which is what they all do, they'll give the ball to somebody else, which, God, I have so many Seattle running backs peppered throughout all of my season-long teams just waiting. Somebody's going to do it, right? Somebody's going to get the bell cow work. We'll see. Listen, Baldwin is almost 100% snap rate, 22% target share, a 70% catch rate. He gets everything that's thrown to him. He's going to play in the slot against Demarius Randall. Demarius Randall, second-year player, 107th in cornerback grade via Pro Football Focus. That's a 35. It's well below average. He was not a good corner. You know, I think the one thing that I read that they were doing with Randall was he was an exterior corner. Or he struggled, and I think that makes good sense. You struggle on the outside. They're going to put him underneath and probably put him underneath on the slot to help him out a little bit, you know, allow him to lean on interior defenders, linebacking, stuff like that, that type of stuff. But I don't think it's all of a sudden going to make him an elite corner, you know, an elite coverage corner. And Doug Baldwin is an elite slot receiver. I mean, he is one of the best slot receivers in the game. So you have an elite slot receiver against a subpar corner against a defense that against the pass in 2016 was 23rd in pass DVOA. So not an efficient defense by any stretch of the imagination. So you certainly have to like Doug Baldwin to be able to soak up some targets in what should be a competitive back and forth game that will require Seattle to throw the ball. So long as Aaron Rodgers does Aaron Rodgers things and doesn't, you know, get behind, which I just don't see it. You just don't see Aaron Rodgers get behind that much. He just doesn't do it. He doesn't let it happen. All right, moving down into the 6Ks. I really like Larry Fitzgerald this week. I mean, I don't have to, like, I'm a Larry Fitzgerald guy. I am. I love him. I think he's just fucking class act. Like one of the best athletes of our generation. Like, he just, everything about him, I just love the dude. I love him. And I love that he's 34 and still in unbelievable shape. He's just handsome. Can we agree to that? I mean, Larry Fitzgerald, he's smiling on your TV screen on Sunday afternoon and you go, look at that guy, huh? Look at that guy. What a guy. That's my feeling about Larry Fitzgerald. The Lions, however, they can't guard the slot. There's no secret there. People know. You've been hearing it across the industry this week. Lions can't guard the slot. 32nd defense in DVOA on 2016. Listen, they're inefficient. They're not great. Fitz was fifth in Sharp Football Stats metric, TOAR, TORS score, which is target and output adjusted receiving success, which measures how many targets does he get, what success rate does he have. You get a rating. He was well above average, elite in his ability to produce on that target share. He will play almost 100% of snaps. And in fact, there are a lot of games where he does play 100% of snaps because he is so effective in every single scheme that they run. I love watching Larry Fitzgerald in design run plays. His ability to crack down. I think we forget he's 6'3", 220 pounds. Like, Larry Fitzgerald is a big dude. Like, a slot receiver, he's not big. I mean, he's got 30 pounds on Doug Baldwin. I mean, Doug Baldwin is 190 pounds. Larry Fitzgerald's like 220. He's a beast. He is a beast. We forget how big this man is, and he makes it felt in that, and even in those design runs, like he cracks in off the slot and seals that edge. You don't get points for that, unfortunately. But the point being is he will play a ton of possessions. And I think one thing that I like was last year through week 1 through 5, he had 3 top 10 finishes as wide receiver in fantasy, 5 touchdowns. That to me is an indicator of 2 things. One, at the advanced age, the early season production from Fitzgerald is easier to rely on because he's not banged up. He's not nursing any injuries. He's not exhausted, you know, beaten up from the season. So I think the fresh Larry Fitzgerald legs really do make a difference. At age 34, you're going to see that. Add to that, that's just the comfort level between him and Palmer. Palmer struggled early in the season, but Larry Fitzgerald was the one that he went to most consistently when he struggled. Now, will he struggle with this Detroit defense? I don't think so, but I think we have to feel comfortable knowing that Larry Fitzgerald is his favorite wide receiver target and take advantage of that fact against a subpar defense. It's just the productivity, market share, price. It's too hard to fade. There's consistency. There's floor there. You just don't get nervous about plugging Larry Fitzgerald into your lineups, especially in a cash game. Kelvin Benjamin, though, is somebody that I'm going to have exposure to. He's a polarizing guy, and I don't love him, but I love this matchup. Listen, Benjamin had some glimmers in the preseason. Some things that were like, whoa, seven catches, 100 yards in one game. He did over 100 yards and 2 touchdowns against the San Francisco team last year. The 49ers are the worst team in football against wide receiver one. Okay, he's got a massive size advantage in this cornerback matchup. He's going up against a second year guy, Rashad Robinson. Listen, Rashad Robinson graded as a below average cornerback. Like, he's not the worst cornerback in the world. Like, there's some things that he's had some good performances, but he's pretty small. And Kelvin Benjamin has about 5 inches and 50 pounds on this kid. You talk about a red zone threat. You know, give me a break. Like, give me one-on-one across the middle against Rashad Robinson. I'm going to take the guy with the 50-pound advantage. Now, I know Kelvin Benjamin is slow. I know that there is an issue, you know, there was an issue with fitness last year. But I think in this situation, you have to like, you know, everything that's coming out of camp and everything that's coming out of is that he looks healthy, that he looks good. He is in shape. And he had a hard summer, I guess. And this is narrative street. This is BS. But like, there's nothing that says that this is going to ever mean anything significant on the football field. Okay. But it's a positive indicator rather than a negative indicator. Take it for what it's worth, right? Take it for what it's worth. Had a rough summer. Kid lost his mom in July and basically just took that moment and was just like focused on football. like just drilled all that energy into football. Cam Newton says he looks phenomenal. He's thrilled. He thinks it's going to be a breakout year for him. Yeah, he's in year three or four of that rookie contract, so this would be a good year. Panthers would pick up the option for him against at the end of 2017 if he has a solid year. So hopefully this is the year where we start to turn our heads and say, okay, the physical skill set matches now with expectations. Okay, guys, I'm going to go quick through some tight ends, kickers, defenses. I'm not going to waste your time. I'm going to give you a high-low option, a high-low option each time. And I think with the tight end strategy, there's a great article, by the way, on 444 Football by Chris Raybon. If you want to find some tight end strategy, tight end has some of the most variance in DFS. Like, it just is wildly variant. It's hugely dependent on touchdowns. And, you know, there's not always a ton of touchdowns week to week to the tight end position. So you do want to target volume, but you do kind of also want to target red zone opportunity. And listen, there's no better guy to target for red zone opportunity than Greg Olsen versus the 49ers. I mean, anytime that Cam is going to be able to do damage in a passing game, which he can against this pretty poor pass defense, you have to consider Olsen. 26% target market share in that offense. I mean, that's the same as Antonio Brown and Julio Jones. Greg Olsen gets the same amount of targets as them. That's the highest on the slate for tight ends, the highest target number on the slate, at least one red zone opportunity per game. You know Cam is going to be successful in this situation. You like the Panthers offense. You have to like Greg Olsen here. I think the same could be said of Delanie Walker, though. Either one of those guys, I like them very much as a high-priced tight end option. I don't usually pay up for tight end in my cash game lineups for NFL, just because I think because of the variance, it's kind of like catcher, right? Because of the amount of variance, you want to just target home run upside, which is God. My brain is still in baseball. You want to target a touchdown upside. And I think these guys both have touchdown upside, but you're paying for it. And perhaps at the expense of target market share at your wide receiver positions. I think if you want to go low, listen, go low with Charles Clay, man. The Jets have nothing on defense. And like we said, that passing defense is absolutely terrible. He's going to get some targets. He had some targets in the preseason. Tyrod favors him. Tyrod has been, you know, giddy. I think Charles Clay is one of the best cheap options at tight end, 4,600. Rick Dennison targeted the tight end at an above average rate. 14% of his target market share goes to the tight end. That's not terrible. It's not unbelievable. It's not Greg Olsen, 25%. And in fact, that's what Shula does. It's 22%. But that's a chicken or the egg thing, right? Is that Greg Olsen's talent or is that Shula? Or is it just both? And Shula and Olsen go, hey, listen, I'm going to be useful. Maybe that's it. But I think Charles Clay here, the only holdover from the Bills passing game in 2016. Tyrod has comfort level with him. We've been kind of, you know, hoping for Clay's pedigree to come through here. He is a big athletic tight end, capable of a lot. So I like him in this spot. I think that there's something to be said for Charles Clay. Will he get in the end zone? I don't know. The red zone scheme for Clay has never been a huge thing, and his touchdown numbers aren't huge, but I think I like the upside of a $4,600 tight end at this price who I can trust in a really good matchup as a home favorite, right? I mean, those are all good indicators to check boxes for me. All right, defense. If you're going high, go for Buffalo. We're streaming defenses against the Jets, okay, guys? Yep, we're doing it. I don't know. The hard part about Buffalo is, you remember, they sold off their secondary, so I don't know how many interceptions there are. So I think you could also go to like a Pittsburgh or something like that. But you know, I'm gonna go low too. I literally like Jacksonville. Jacksonville, just they got so much talent there. They had cornerback talent last year. their offense couldn't stay on the field, and so their defense really struggled, and they had some injuries and stuff like that. But they had a massive free agent year. They went and got A.J. Bouye from the Texans, who is one of the best coverage corners out there. I'm just not scared of the Texans' offense. I've never been scared of Lamar Miller. He doesn't worry me. I think he's inefficient. I'm not scared of Tom Savage. I love saying Tom Savage because it's like, who's your mortgage adjuster? Tom Savage. You know him down there? He's at Town and Country Financial. Tom Savage? Yeah, Tom Savage. No, he's an NFL quarterback, Tom Savage. Give me a break. You could target bad QBs and low totals here. This game is going to have a brutally slow pace. There's not going to be a lot of opportunity. It's going to be defensively dominated. Jacksonville, there's a talent. They have a ton of talent, and they are cheap right now. I think that they are going to be one of the better units in the league before we know it. And Pro Football Focus acknowledges it. They bumped up to the number 14 unit in the front seven. Calais Campbell up there. There's just a lot to like as far as their talent. And I think that with the ability to slow down the game like Marone wants to do and just run the ball and drain the clock, I think you have to like them in this situation. Listen, the same could be said of the Texans. Obviously, they're going to probably be able to create some issues for Blake Bortles. they have the best defensive line in football, and I think there's a lot of people predicting that Jadeveon Clowney could be, defensive player of the year and finally completely healthy and looked last year just like a man among boys again, like he did at Clemson. Like he's just eaten. Like I just watch Houston games. I just watch Houston games to watch the sacks. That's why I watch Houston. I'll watch Texans to see them get to the quarterback. That's just fun. They're just so good on defense. So that to me, I think Houston, Buffalo on the high end, the low end, Jacksonville, and LA too. I mean, if Aaron Donald was back, I would be even more into this because I think you could throw an extra sack onto their total. Home favorites against Scott Tolzien, who also works at Town and Country Financial, along with Tom Savage. He's in the satellite office. Scott Tolzien and Tom Savage, your local mortgage adjusters. No, they're quarterbacks in the NFL, guys. Scott Tolzien's bad. That whole offense is not going to be very effective in this situation. It's not going to help. I think LA has they are similar to Jacksonville insofar as they have a lot of young talent that you can like here. But I think I would probably prefer to save $500 and go down to Jacksonville. So, hey man. Oh, kicker. Sorry. Phil Dawson, Arizona, indoors favored. It's pretty much all I need from a kicker, right? Decent total, indoors favored. That's what I want. Although you can also attach yourself to guys like Mason Crosby or what's his name from Atlanta, Matt Bryant. Those two guys also very interesting. Although I probably prefer Matt Bryant, but he's outdoors at in Chicago, shitty field, all that kind of stuff. So Phil Dawson for me, indoors, good offense, decent total in that game. That's the kind of stuff that you want. That aligns to kicker success. So I like Phil Dawson in this situation. All right. Hey, that's it, man. That's it. First player breakdown, guys. Hopefully you liked it. I think the format is probably as expected for Lineup Logic. I hope it fit your expectations. Patreon.com/LineupLogic. Get over there. Get in there for the Lineup Show. The Lineup Show is going to be so, so very, very wonderful. If you haven't checked out yesterday's game-by-game breakdown, do so. You may hear something you missed. And if you didn't hear the Process Pod on Monday, check out the Improving Your Process Pod. It talks a lot about why we use DVOA and how we're finding DVOA outliers to improve where we're projecting teams, right? Why do we project the Rams to be successful? Well, DVOA. DVOA for the Colts defense. You know, it's there. These are the indicators. This is the baseline information that you guys have to have in order to understand kind of the language that we're talking here in these pods. Hey, good luck in your contest. We'll see you patrons on Friday for the lineup show, patreon.com/lineuplogic. We're very pumped. Cheat sheet coming out tomorrow. This, by the way, on the website, keep your eyes peeled for some more content. There is just so much good content over there at lineuplogicdfs.com. Roto Juan, Mike Alexander, writer over there, throwing some stuff up on the website for secondary matchups, wide receiver cornerback matchups to target. He's a beast. Thank you, Mike. And Joe Berg, man. Joey Berg, my man. You guys know Joe Berg from the chalkboard and multiple GPP takedowns that he had during baseball season, because he is an ownership guru. He is going to be doing his chalkboard column for Friday on the website Lineup Logic DFS. Both of these must reads. These guys are talented, man. We got great talent over there on lineuplogicdfs.com. So get involved. Get over there. Hey, good luck, and we will see you this weekend.